And as you know, for your experiences here at Shalavim, and God willing continuing, those years in the Beis Medrash are the most wonderful years of your life. Because they shape your whole relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. They shape your relationship with the Mesorah. You feel that you're part of something much greater than yourself, and that you feel you're part of the world of reality. Also want to acknowledge Dr. Kahana. The top person in our shir, the top Talmud in our shir at the yeshiva was Dr. Kahana. He professionally became a dentist, but he also was a major mentor to myself and to many of the young men in the shir who exposed us to the world of the Rambam, the Rashba, how to analyze a Havamina Maskana, how to analyze a Machlokas properly. My first exposure to this sidra, see, I grew up on a farm about 50 miles from Buffalo, German-Jewish refugees, in the cattle business. That's what we did in Germany for hundreds of years, bought and sold livestock. And when we fled, when we were refugees from Hitler, we looked for a part in the United States, an area where it was cattle country. Upstate New York is a huge dairy industry. We knew there would be kosher food up there, and that's where I grew up. You have to understand, when I grew up, I never heard the word Rashi until I was 14 years old. The Ramban, it was told, was 15 years old. My first exposure to Parshas Toldos was the following. And it was a term that was so embedded. Our area, you have to understand, there were very few blacks, very few Catholics. We were the only Jews. It was primarily a Lutheran and a Methodist community. And what they said was not even, some people meant it in an anti-Semitic way. Others didn't mean it anti-Semitically. It just was part of the, you know, the sprach, the lingua. We're having a discussion, right? We're trying to negotiate. Whether it's a baseball card, whether it's a matchbox car, if we're adults, whether it's buying and selling a cow. Don't Jew me. Don't Jew me. What are you, a Jew? And they didn't mean it in a negative way, but that was the language. And then I started to understand theologically where that term came from. Who are the Jews? The chosen people? Yaakov Jewed his own brother. He Jewed his own father. It was built in manipulation. It was rooted in deceit. And his own mother. The mother's milk of a Jew is lies and manipulation. Even at the expense of her own husband and the expense of her own flesh and blood. Those are the Jews. That's why they were rejected as the chosen people. That's why they're a despised people. Because their whole claim to anything spiritual, religious, is rooted in lies and filth. And this is how they saw the story of Yaakov Avinu in Parshas Toldos. Now you and I know it's a corrupt, it's a perverse way of looking at Toldos. How do we respond to that? How do we understand Parshas Toldos? I want to ask a number of questions before we start to analyze them. First and foremost, you talk about a superficial reading of our sidra. One thing that's very wrong is this notion that Yitzhak Avinu was nard. He was naive, he was gullible. He didn't figure out Esav. We're going to see that Chas v'Shalom. He understood Esav in a much more profound way than we understand Esav. To look at Yitzhak in a simplistic way, that he was duped or fooled, is a corruption. But yet, you have to ask that question. And we have to address that issue. Another issue we have to ask and address. Yaakov is so concerned about being caught. V'ayisikim tateya. But you and I know that in 20 minutes from now, as soon as Yaakov leaves, within 20 minutes, and it was less than 20 minutes, Esav is going to come in. So what's the whole purpose of fooling, of deceiving father when the whole rouge is going to be caught? He's going to be exposed. It's one thing if you're doing something where you're doing it in a subtle way and no one will find out. There's a reason why it can't be found out. But here specifically, we all know. Yaakov and Rivka knew what was going to happen. The key is, don't get caught in the act. It's okay to get caught 20 minutes later. Why? What difference does that make? It makes no sense. Another series of questions, which really addresses and opens up our sidra. Before we go to those questions, though, I want to make an assumption. And please,
I'm going to lay out this assumption. You all know the Rav Zatzal, Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik. Who is he doing with Soloveitchik? Who is he named after? Who is the Rav the namesake of? Sorry? That's right, the Beis Halevi. It's Al-Tazevi. The Rav of Brisk, one of the Gedolei Yisrael. And many of you learn the Beis Halevi. And take a look at the Beis Halevi in our Sidri. Beis Halevi says it's the Farish. And if you look at the Sephorno, many of you learn the Sephorno, was a great, great Renaissance Jew, who not only was revered by the Jewish community in Italy, but the church fathers in his time, they used to come to him to understand Tanakh, to understand the Hebrew language. He was a physician. He was a huge Talmud Chacham. He was a great physician. He was someone who was revered by Jew and Gentile alike. One of the real great Renaissance Jews in history. The Sephorno in his Parish doesn't say the Parish like the Beis Halevi, but he says the same thing. And that is the following assumption we're going to make. And it's a fair assumption. The whole debate between mother and father, between Yitzchak and Rivka, was not regarding the spiritual legacy, the intellectual legacy, the transmission of the Masorah. The language in Perek Chaf Tes is the Birkas Avraham. The Birkas Avraham, Eretz Migurecha. Meaning, who ultimately will be responsible for teaching ethical monotheism? For continuing a community that will engage, that will challenge people not to be only Avodah Zarah, to take the godly values and apply them to their business life, to the world around them, to how they treat other human beings? That Birkas Avraham, there's no machlokes. Very clear. When Yitzchak Avinu sends Yaakov to Syria, to Padan Aram, he gives him the Birkas Avraham. And he gives him the Yerusha, that it will be his nation that will inherit Jewish people. I'm sorry, will inherit the land of Israel. I'd like to make a second assumption. Number one assumption we made is the Beis Halevi and the Sephorno. That there was no machlokus about the spiritual destiny and legacy. The machlokus is what? Mital hashamayim u'mishman ha'aretz. The chamish and shishi. Those of you who are up to that point of being Marva Seder. In the chamish and shishi, what's mital hashamayim u'mishman ha'aretz? What is that dealing with? Power. Who's going to run the government? Finance, the economy. What is it dealing with? Who's going to control the economy? Who's ultimately going to shape the physical world? That's the debate, and we're going to come back to a series of questions. But assumption number two, and I think this is a very fair assumption, many of you have learned Sefer Bereishis throughout high school, and those of you who are Shana Bet, your first year Chalavim, with this assumption. And that is the Ramban's assumption. That our whole methodology to Sefer Bereishis is Maaseh Avos Sivim Labanim. That the events that are recorded by the Ribono Shalom in Sefer Bereishis are what? Those are the... Imagine if you're an architect creating a blueprint for this room or for the Beis HaMedrash. Before the Beis HaMedrash is ever built, before the Yeshiva is ever built, there's this architectural blueprint. So those events are the architectural blueprint for Jewish history. Within Maaseh Avos Sivim Labanim, who's Yaakov and who's Esav? Not merely two brothers. Yaakov, as you know, is the father of Bnei Yisrael, Beis Yaakov. He is the father that ultimately will produce the Jewish nation. Who is Esav? Esav's descendants, you know from Chazal, are Rome. And the terrible animosity, which we'll come back to, over three centuries between Rome and Judea, between the Jews and the Romans, Esav and Yaakov. And what became of Rome? What became of Rome? As you know from history, with the breakup of the dissipation of the Roman Empire, you have two areas called the western part, Roman Catholicism. The eastern part we call Byzantium. The Eastern Orthodox, the Russian Orthodox, the Greek Orthodox. But Christianity, whether it's Roman Catholicism or Eastern Orthodox, Christianity and the terrible, terrible challenges we've had and the animus that we've had, the Jewish Christian animosity over the millennia, this is all rooted in Esav Yaakov and the tension between Esav Yaakov. So that's my second assumption this evening. Here are the questions. You're Rivka. I apologize, you're Yitzchak. Why would you give the political, the financial, the economic legacy? What will be the Jewish nation will be two tiers. The spiritual and intellectual is Yaakov. The financial is going to be Yitzchak. Why would you give... Sorry. Esav. Why would you give it to Esav in his descendants? Yes, why Esav? And why not Yaakov? You hear the question? Why are you giving... control, political, financial.
Vital Shemayim and Mishmane Aretz.
Yes to Esav and no to Yaakov. That's question number one. There's really two questions. And the exact same set of questions by Rivka. Why are you giving that to Yaakov? Yes. And not to Esav.
No to Esav, yes to Yaakov. So if we put literally a grid, why is Yitzhak choosing to do this dichotomy and have Esav be in charge of the financial, political power and not Yaakov?
Why is Rivka saying no? It's one package. It's one system. And she's writing off Esav. She's writing him off from the Masorah altogether. Please don't tell me, because I believe that is also superficial reading of the Parsha. Please don't tell me that Rivka had animosity and didn't love Esav. I'll tell you, it can't be true. How do I know that? Puzzle. Esav is married, he's got wives, he's got children. And who does he keep the bigdei chamudos? His most treasured possessions. We're talking about a man in his 50s, 60s. Who does he keep that those treasured possessions with? It's nothing. The one woman that he really trusts, the one woman he really loves, is his mother. It's not like she didn't love her son or have a relationship with her son Esav. You can imagine how challenging that was to have to write him off out of the Masorah. But the question is why? Any thoughts? Someone explain to me Yitzhak. What's the svara behind Yitzhak?
Of giving the political, the financial, the economic to Esav and not to the...
What was that?
Yes? Do you give both to Yaakov that that is the physical choice? Do I choose Torah or do I choose money? But if you stick with just Torah, then you have systems defined just that. And everybody knows it.
What's your name?
Tal.
Tal? Tal, excellent. Let's build on what Tal said. Tal's explaining you.
There's a term that's a false term. It was fabricated by two Jewish people. You ever hear the term the golden age of Spain? The golden era of Spain? You ever hear that term? It's not true. You know who fabricated that? Two groups. The German Jews, who after the emancipation from Frederick the Great started to become part and parcel of Prussian society and German society and wanted to show that historically Jews played a role like that. And they made up the term golden era of Spain, golden age of Spain. You know who else? The Zionists, who are grappling with the following problem. What are we going to do when we go to Palestine and there's an indigenous Arab population there?
They're going to be real excited when a bunch of Eastern European Jews come and settle and
start taking over the land. No, what are you talking about? We've had the most wonderful relationship with Islam. And look at the golden age of Spain. It's a lie. It's not true.
Relative to Ashkenaz, to the barbaric world in France and Germany, a primitive world, a superstitious world, a world without sanitation, yes, Spain was much better. But let me just give you an example.
Everyone's going to quote from Shmuel Hanagi, the great Shmuel Hanagi, the vizier, who ran the Islamic regime in Andalusia, in southern Spain. Do you know what happened to his son, Yosef Hanagi, the next vizier?
They executed him. They blamed the Jew for the problems that were going wrong in the government.
The Rambam, the Halakha Rambam, whose father and grandfather and great-grandfather, they were Dayanim.
There were communities in Cordoba
that they had for centuries. The Almohads came to them. And they gave him three options. You die, you flee and become expelled from the country, or you convert to Islam. That's a golden era. And that wasn't the only time when Almohads did that. There were other times that was done to the Jews.
Relative to Ashkenaz, it was a much better place. But it wasn't golden.
You know what a golden era is, a golden age? You know what the greatest gullus that's ever existed? This is America. We've never had it this good. I'm not telling you it's perfect. But the Jews in our history have never had it as good as Canada and America. Never. And you know what you and I could describe our experience in America as? You know how we could describe it? Three words from Parshas Hazinu. Vayishman, Yeshurun, Vayivad. And the Jewish people get fat. We become successful and we forget the Ribbono Shel Olam. And we kick back and we don't need God. In the world that it's never been so good for us. Whether you take one poll or the other, one says that there's a 54% intermarriage rate, which means you by definition are in the minority. Your peers, you amongst your peers who marry Jewish, are the minority of American Jews. Another says it's 56%. Do you know, if we go to your peers, I'm not talking about 12-year-olds, I'm talking about your peers, American Jewish men and women, your age, 18, 19, 20. Let's fill in the blank. Abraham, Yitzchak, and maybe 20%, maybe 20% at best will be able to fill in that blank. That's the world that we live in. You know what the concern Yitzchak had with giving over the financial, the economic, the political? It's exactly the point Paul was making. Avayishvam Yeshurim Vayiva. A Jewish people, you want me to say it in Archsprach?
Bernie Madoff.
Where the greatest Ponzi scheme in the history of humanity was perpetrated by Jews. And by the way, let's not just pick on Bernie Madoff. What about in our world? How many yeshivas do we have that have slumlords with their name on the yeshiva building? Or that have people who went to prison for SEC fraud? And that's the building that's put up there. How do you educate a kid when you're telling him Bava Kama and Bava Metzia, and then they see names up on buildings? It speaks volumes. Because bottom line, it says money talks. That's the problem of giving it to Yitzchak said, of giving it to Yaakov. Do you know why that's a problem? It's a problem because it's a terrible statement. That the Jews will lose their focus, will not be the people of the spirit, will not be the people of education, will not be the people who engage and challenge and inspire people, but will get caught up. Will forget their mission, will forget their purpose. We are more American than Americans. We have 10 United States senators. We actually have 9. Dianne Feinstein, luckily, is not Jewish, but she considers herself a Jew. Look at the influence we have on Wall Street. Look at the influence we have in textiles, in the clothing industry. Look at the influence in the press. Look at the influence in politics. In the White House, the Democratic White House with the Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod, it was true of the Republican White House. When we met with President Bush in the Oval Office on a number of issues vis-a-vis Israel, he said, he joked with me. You know what he said? He says, I have to shut down the White House for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He said, because the people who run this administration, they're all off. He said, we don't function like Tony Yom Kippur. That's the most powerful man on the face of the earth saying that. And there was truth to what he was saying. With Josh Bolden and others. Never. God forbid, chas v'shalom, that we call Yitzhak naive. He saw the challenge of giving the bracha to Yaakov. He saw the challenge of what could become in terms of assimilation, intermarriage, financial corruption, losing our purpose of being a Kiddush Hashem and an Or LaGoyim. Next. Why not give it to Esau? Why not give it to Esau? I'm sorry. Why yes to Esau? I apologize. Why give it to Esau? Why? Why? Esav is not some insignificant character. And when we say Esav, we mean Esav's descendants as well. Do you think he's a leaf that's going to just dry up and wither away? All right, he didn't make it to the Masorah. He's irrelevant to history. Esav is a Koach. You want to talk history? You want to talk our relationship with Esav? We're all familiar with what happened in the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba revolt. A 500,000 Jews, maybe 600,000, were slaughtered, were murdered. Those were innocent men, women, and children. You know, the Gemara in Yevamos talks about the 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva? So the Gemara uses the term Askara. They were nifter Askara. The Rav Zatzal said, that's Lashon Sagi Nahar. That's a euphemism. Whether Askara is anthrax, whether Askara is diphtheria, that's not what they died of. They were slaughtered and butchered by the Romans. And they were left, they weren't even allowed to be buried, as you know, from the Gemara and Brachas and 7th Perek, and from the concept of benching. What about the Chmelnytsky massacres, huh? When 100,000 Jews were butchered, when thousands of Jews were sold as slaves, when hundreds of communities were uprooted. What about the Audit of Fe in Portugal? What about the Inquisition in Spain? What about the Khorban, the Shoah, 70 years ago, where we lost again one-third of our people? This time it wasn't 500,000. This time the 33% was 6 million. Who did that, huh? Who did that? That was at the hands of Esau. He's
not going to wither away and dry up. You write him out of the Masorah. Do you understand the ramifications of that? That's what Yitzchak argued. We have a shot of keeping it in the Masorah. What's the shot of keeping it in the Masorah? What's the shot of that? You know what it is? He's not going to become your next Rosh Hashiva. He's not going to become a Sagan Mashkiach from a blacksmith. He's not going to be nominated for... Sorry about the shower you're getting in the front row. It's not Erev Shabbos yet. He is not... Go back to where I was. Sorry. Yeah. You and I are not going to nominate Asa to the Lamed Vav Tzadikimus. Okay? Yitzchak never thought that for a second. However, can I use an analogy? And this is not meant, please don't take this too literal. We all know kids, okay, who we go to school with, that are ADHD. We know a lot of our friends are ADHD. And they can't sit and shy over a bottle of water. It's not going to happen. They're going out of the Kaylin. If those kids are not turned off by us, their peers, by the parents, by the Rebbeim, and I have big rachmanis on the Rebbeim, what do you do with a kid like this who can't sit still, who can't concentrate? Okay? If we don't turn them off, those are the ones who are going to become the leaders of Klal Yisrael. You know why? Because they're creative. Most kids with ADHD are very bright. They think outside the box. We're a little bit rigid. We're a little bit narrow. They're the ones who are going to become the leaders. They're the ones who are going to engage in certain business activities from a tzedakah point of view, from a creativity point of view, from a leadership, a vision point of view. They're the ones that we're all going to be following. Lahavdil, Asa. You know how he'll relate to the Rabbanu Shalom? You know how Asa will do that? Power through wealth. Express his appreciation, Hashem, by looking after the Kohanim, by looking after the Jews, by taking care of the Jews, who will serve as the educators, the teachers, the mentors, the spiritual mentors. The idea is that's how you keep Esav in the fold. That was Yitzchak's argument. Why no Yaakov, and why yes Esav? Why he needs to be kept in the fold. Let's go to Rivka now. The other half of the coin. Why did Rivka not want Esav to be a two-tiered system? The Jews who will be the educators, the spiritual mentors, and the B'nai Esav who will run the governments, who will run the economies, who will run industry. Why not? Why not? Who here, and it's not an easy statement, we probably don't get to it until later in life, but who here is trying to delve into Eo? Probably the most difficult sefer to know. You're familiar with the Gemara in Bava Basra, the Tesvav. You know the Shita in Bava Basra that says Eo is a fictional work. It's a fictitious work. Lohayavolibra. Who's Eo? You know what Eo is? A fictitious character that was authored by who? By Moshe Rabbeinu. What was Moshe grappling with? The most difficult challenge that we as thinking human beings, not just thinking Jews, because by the way, is Eo Jewish? No. That work is not a Jewish work. Why not? Because the issue in English is called theodicy. In Hebrew we say tzadik viralo rasha v'tovlo. What's tzadik viralo? When terrible things happen to righteous people, what's rasha v'tovlo? When wicked people, when terrible people have wonderful largesse and grace in life. That issue is how we relate to that aspect of the Hashgacha. We all are grappling with that issue. And Moshe Rabbeinu, the most perfected human being that ever lived, addressed that. And he did not make Eo into a Jew because it's a human quandary. Any thinking human being is grappling with that issue. It's not uniquely Jewish, that issue. You know what Rivka said? You're going to give the financial, you're going to give the economic, you're going to give the political control to Esav, to his descendants, to the Romans, to the Germans, what, to the Spaniards, the Frederican and Dominican monks in the 14th and 15th since the 16th century? You can't do that? What's going to happen, huh? You want the world to perceive the Ribono Shalom? You want the world to perceive spiritual values? When the powerful oppress, when the powerful are corrupt in how they treat the pious, and how they treat the religious, and how they treat the spiritual, and then you expect what? People to see God in that?
Where are you going to find Hashem in this world? She argued.
Maybe you're right that he'll take the blessings and use them towards charitable means, and use them towards supporting those who educate and teach and mentor. Maybe! And what happens if he doesn't? And what happens in all likelihood when that doesn't happen? How are you going to see in a corrupt, dishonest, in a sick, perverted world, how are you going to see the Ribbono Shel Olam there? Huh? She loved Esau. He loved her. She felt you can't have a world of Tzadik Hara without Rosh HaBetulim. Why not? Why did she want to give the financial bracha to Yaakov? Go back to what Tal said. Go back to what Tal said. Is not Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivat a problem? It's not just in America. It was true in Germany before the Nazis. It was true in our history throughout. All of you are very familiar, as familiar as I, with the stories of the Tanakh, when Jews had too much power, too much wealth. Shomron, the northern kingdom, it was a case. It was a case in Yehuda. It's not unique to America. I think America is the greatest example of it, but it's not unique. How did Rivka deal with that? How did Rivka deal with that? You know what the answer to that question is? You. You're the answer to that question. What do I mean? Tell you what I mean. Simple factual question. What is the largest chelek of Shulchan Aruch? Of the Dalet Chelkei Shulchan Aruch, what's the largest chelek? Choshen Mishpat. What's Choshen Mishpat? How do I go about selling a piece of real estate that I own? How do I treat my employees? How do I market? You know, Dr. Kahana came here, he's starting a dental office. He's going to have competition. How does he market himself vis-a-vis his competition? How do I deal with retail and wholesale? Problem that we're facing in America. The issue that all of America is facing. What are we going to do with health care? I mean, do you understand what's going on right now? And if anyone's here from Canada or Great Britain, I want to apologize. I know this sounds a little offensive. I don't mean... We don't want to be Canada. I'm not talking about in sports. I'm talking about in health care. We don't want that when you're suffering from migraines, you're going to have to wait 7 months to get an MRI, and then guess what? It turned out that little tumor that was starting the migraines, it could have been removed. Now it's spread throughout the brain. You're going to die of brain cancer. We don't want a country like that. We don't want to be England that if you're too old, you don't get dialysis. Because we have a triage of resources. And you don't count if you're 73. You only count if you're 53 or 43. We don't want a world like that. But I got to tell you something. No one spends more money on healthcare than America. You want to know something? It's a joke. No one! It's 16% of the GNP. And I think we're rated, listen to this, I think we're rated 31 in the world. Our quality of health in America is something like number 31. You know why? Because the large majority of that money is spent on the last 2 to 4 weeks of life. You know what they say in Canada and Britain? You're not going to live anyway. It's just delaying death. You're not getting a respirator. You're not getting dialysis. In America, we'll do better. You know what the problem in America? You know what the problem is? One out of every 6 Americans does not have health care. Isn't that a citizen of the country? Isn't that an entitlement? You're entitled to health care? And 1 out of 6 Americans doesn't have it. What does the Torah have to say? Is what you learn in the base medrash irrelevant to that? That's the important stuff.
This just what you do say is the base medrash. What you do is davening. Whom cares? Whom cares? The Torah I saw maybe about the commas, the sheets and stuff. That's about the common. Torts and damages, interpersonal. What you're learning here in Shaladin is going to ultimately transform how you do business, how you treat your fellow human beings, and it's going to be a model to your fellow human being. How to conduct affairs. 2 words, Rivka said. Toras Chaim. Toras Chaim. What does that mean? Torah, the man of the spirit, the rabbi, the Kohen, the Talmud Chacham, the davener. That has to be the person who's shaping the issues of healthcare, who's shaping the economy, who's defining principles in terms of Wall Street, who's defining the government. Okay, just to give you a simple example, the first time Bibi Netanyahu was prime minister, you know they legislated something in Israel? the harshest, most significant anti-spousal abuse laws, the harshest, most significant anti-child abuse laws in the world. That's an Orlogoi. And Israel now, is the state of Israel, is a teacher to humanity how you treat a woman, how you treat a child. What happens to your child behind closed doors is not your business. That child has rights. And the world looks to Israel when it comes to legislation.
Rivka argued, you know why it has to go to Yaakov? You can't have a schizophrenia.
Talmud Chacham Yerushalayim Ben Torah. Everything he learns in the Beis Medrash, everything he learns in Shul, everything he learns in Chaldeen has to translate into what? How we run our countries. How we do business. How we treat fellow human beings. How we inspire, engage, and challenge the world to be more perfected. You can't have a dichotomy. That's why it has to be Yaakov. You can't be Esau. So we answered 5 of the 6 questions. Chas v'shalom, that Yitzhak was naive. He was not naive.
All of you are familiar with the Gemara in Erev in Daf Yud Gimel. Elu ve'elu Yireilu King Chai. What does the Ritva say in that Gemara? Elu ve'elu.
You've got the Shittas of Beis Hillel. You've got the Shittas of Beis Shammai. I think there's 765 Machlokas. So we in practice, most of the time, we postulate like Beis Hillel, correct?
Is that because they're right?
Absolutely not.
You can make Birkas HaTorah on Beis Shammai the same way you can make Birkas HaTorah on Beis Hillel.
Both of their opinions, Ritva says, are logical, rational opinions that fit within the rubric of the Masorah. In practice, what do? In practice, you have to conduct yourself one way or the other. So Beis Hillel is the majority. You're posking like Beis Hillel. Not because Beis Shammai was wrong. That's Eilu Ve'eilu Yireilu King Chaim. Rabosai, I want to argue the following point. Yitzchak was not wrong.
Yitzchak's fear of Vayishman Yishur and Ve'iva.
Yitzchak's fear of what would happen if you remove and you reject Esau from the Masorah community. History proved him to be right. History proved him to be a nubby. But Hashgacha, Ribon Sholem, Chasbah Chalila. Not because Yitzchak was naive, Chasbah Chalila. Not because he was wrong, Chasbah Chalila. You know who else Paskin like Rivka? Yes, the Ribon Sholem. You know who else Paskin like Rivka in the end? Yitzchak.
Look at Pasuk Lamed Gimel. If you haven't gotten up to that when you're Marv Sedra, be very careful when you read Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Perikot Zayin Lamed Gimel.
The 3 words that Yitzchak says. You know what the 3 words are? After Esav comes in. And Yitzchak realizes that wasn't Esav. Yitzchak says 3 words. Gam Baruch Yiyah. Gam Baruch Yiyah. What does that mean? Gam is doesn't mean also. It means a term of emphasis. Very often in Tanakh, Gam is a term of emphasis. He shall surely be blessed. When Yitzchak realized, with all of Rivka's, you know, arguing and her presenting the case, and by the way, like we struggle with our children. Issues about kids are not black and white. What yeshiva you should go to? Should you say Shana Bet? Should you say Shana Gimel? After Shalavim, where should you go? Should it be Nehri Yisrael? Should it be Lander? Should it be Penn? Should it be Yeshiva University? Should it be the Mir? Those are difficult issues. And your parents struggle with those issues. Okay? And then what happens afterwards? And when you're very soon from now, many of you are going to be very seriously dating in 2-3 years from now. Is this young woman right for you? Do they turn you off by telling you she's not right? How do they deal with it? How do they get you to see their opinion without driving you away? The issues they had was to what high school to send you. Right? Those of you who live out in the 5 towns, you're going to go to DRS, you're going to go to Rambam. What are the pros? What are the cons? Which school is right for you? Those of you who are in Jersey, you're going to go to MTA, you're going to go to TAPC. What are the pros and cons? What's right for you? These are difficult issues. Black and white issues you don't struggle with. They're obvious.
The Birkas Avram was obvious. Eretz Migurecha was obvious.
The problem is Mital HaShamayim V'Mishmani HaAretz, which is not so obvious. It's not so obvious. That's the issue they struggled with. And she's not going to convince him. What convinced Yitzchak? You know what convinced Yitzchak? When he saw, when he experienced, and I want to underline the word experienced, that Yaakov could deal with Esav on Esav's terms, in Esav's world, and maintain his integrity. Rashi quotes two midrashim. One is Anochi Yitzhakarecha. Granted, Yitzhak heard it. It is I, Esav, your firstborn. But you know the Rashi, Anochi, it is I, Esav Bicharecha.
Esav is your firstborn.
Sorry. First I give you a shout and then I kick your foot. I apologize. What about the Yikra Shemel Kefal Fanai? The Chayim Shemayim, Shem Shemayim Shkur B'fi. What about that, huh? Yaakov could conduct himself with the integrity, the decency, the Yira Shemayim of Yaakov, all while dealing with Esav in Esav's world. Yitzchak realized. After experiencing that,
he realized that Rivka was right.
And when it says, one of the most verbose phrases in the whole Tanakh, Vayecharad Yitzchak Charada Gidola Ad Me'od. Vayecharad Yitzchak Charada Gidola Ad Me'od.
He trembled a great and awesome trembling. What does Rashi quote the Medrash there? What does the Medrash say?
Ra'al Pisco Shol Gehenim Psukim Rufanim. He understood that when he said Gam Baruch Yeh, you know what he understood? He was going to be posturing like his wife. And he was going to be writing off Esav from Minnesota. And if you want to translate it into historical terms, that means the Shoah, and that means the Chmielnytskyi massacres, and that means an Inquisition, and that means an expulsion from Spain, and that means what the Romans did to us post Bar Kokhba,
and that means what the Romans did to us before in 70 of the Common Era.
He sees all of that happen. That's a great trembling. All that koach, which is going to go unfulfilled. But on the other hand, and this is where I want to end. On the other hand, Rivka, now Yitzchak, the Ribonish Olam Paskin Devar. If the Mesorah is going to go through the same Talmud Chacham, same B'nai Torah, the same Yiri Shemayim, or what?
We're going to take those values
and run a civilization, and run an economy, and run businesses. And we're going to see the Ribono Shel Olam in the workplace. We're going to see Ribono Shel Olam in the medical profession, in the hospital. We're going to see the Ribono Shel Olam in governmental policy. Just like we see the Ribono Shel Olam in the Tefillah and Talmud Torah.
It's a Torah Chaim.
The Kohen, the Rav, the Talmud Chacham, is not just the master of Orach Chaim. The Kohen, the Rav, and the Talmud Chacham is the practitioner and the master of Kosher Mishpat. And that, to you, our future, you are our future. Rabbi Waxman is preparing you and training that you're going to lead Klal Yisrael. He's training you for that. That is the greatest blessing you have, and at the same time, it's the greatest challenge you have. It is the greatest bracha, and at the same time, the greatest challenge that you have. Of being the Birkas Avram, and being the Birkas Avraham in the context of Tal HaShemayim and Mishmari Ha'aretz. I come to your souls. I'd like to introduce Rabbi Berg. Any of you here from L.A.? Uh-oh, we got to make sure we have a boy from L.A. Rabbi Berg started. Rabbi Berg in Los Angeles about 6 years ago. Started in three public schools, something called the JSU. What's JSU, Jewish Student Union? We said, your peers can't answer Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. You know what's worse? You know what's worse than that? You and I, how do we view Israel? Tiny little Israel, our homeland, in the midst of 22 Arab nations, in the midst of the Iranian oil system where those funds are being used to fund terrorists, who in the north and Hezbollah and the south and Hamas kill our children, kill our women, abduct our young boys. We see Israel as the only democracy, the only ethical country in a world of sickness and barbarianism. That's not the narrative your peers are getting. Do you know the narrative your peers are getting? I'm talking about through CNN, through the internet, through the New York Times, the LA Times. You know what Israel is? It's a pariah nation that's backed by $3.4 billion of American tax money. When Americans are out of work, we're spending $3.4 billion on a bunch of Jews in the Middle East who, with their sickness, you know, they play the Holocaust game. And they try to get the world's sympathy with their Holocaust game. And we're backing them?
and they take Palestinian children, and they cage them in like animals, and a Palestinian can't even travel, he's caged in, the blockades, and they use their military power on these poor Arabs. That's how they see Israel. It's worse than anything South Africa was. It's a pariah nation. And shame on America for backing it and funding it. That's their exposure. We have a young man who learned in Eretz Israel, who went to Yale. He was the head of the pro-Israel lobby. Guess who his counterpart, the head of Justice of Palestine at Yale University, was? A kid with the last name of Goldberg from Beverly Hills, California. Not a Palestinian, not an Egyptian. Goldberg! Okay? That's the education. That's the narrative that your peers, and younger than you, it's even worse, are getting. They don't know an algebra base. They can't read Hebrew. They don't know the story of Hanukkah. It doesn't exist. Rabbi Berg did the following. At the Amish Gazelle. He went from 3 clubs to 250 clubs. Right now, on an average week, he's got 9,000 kids attending weekly and about 20,000 kids attending monthly. It's not NCSY. Many of you were involved in NCSY. Many of you went to NCSY Cola. These are kids that are totally unaffiliated. They're not Reformed. They're not Conservative. They're not Orthodox. They're unaffiliated. Who's reaching out to them? The Burgies. That's, by the way, from the OU. That's why the most of the money that's made from kashrus and fundraising, the largest percentage of it, goes into this. Because we want to change 56 and 54%. And by the way, not all these kids are going to become B'nai Torah and they're not going to become Shomer Shabbos. But we're hoping they're going to marry Jewish. They're going to go to a university where there's a Jewish program, where there's a successful Hillel. Maybe we can get them to Israel. Rabbi Berg is starting programs with UVU, with Bar Ilan, with IBC, to get them out of a semester or a year abroad, where they get Torah learning together with their secular studies. We're looking for, if I could quote the film, A Few Good Men. We're looking for you to be leaders. You guys are bright. You're confident in who you are as Yerei Shemayim, as B'nai Torah. You're intelligent. You're proud of being Jewish. And you're charismatic. And you care. You care about Klal Yisrael, you care about Am Yisrael. We're here, and Rabbi Berg is going to be back later in the year. If you guys are going to stay here, stay in Chaldean, stay another year. But if you're not going to make Aliyah, you're going to go back to America, we need you. We need you desperately. Put you into those clubs to be role models, to teach, to inspire, to engage these kids, to make Jews out of them. And there's a wide spectrum of what making a Jew means, to keep them Jewish. These are kids who are coming from families of thousands of years of Yiddishkeit that are being lost by the weak. We need your help. You're our best. You're our brightest, you're our most decent, you're our most sincere. We need you. At this point, I apologize for taking way too much time. I want to hand it over to Rabbi.
At this point, I feel a little bit like Marv on Motzei Yom Kippur. You just had Nila, you're all hungry, and you've got to kind of get up a little kavanah for Marv. So I will be brief because I know that dinner awaits you. I just want to relate a story. I was actually on the plane, I think it was a day or two. I kind of lose my track of time when I'm here in Israel. I was on the plane, and my early career in NCSY, I've been in NCSY 19 years, but my first 9 years I spent in Central East NCSY, which is Cleveland, Columbus, Detroit, Indianapolis, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Dayton, Toledo. Anyone from... No LA? No? Okay, thank you. Where are you from? Cleveland. Okay, great. Part of the story is, takes place in Cleveland. So I was on the plane literally a day or two ago with one of our NCSYers who had grown up in Indianapolis. And we started reminiscing and talking about some of the stories from back in the day. And he reminded me of a story that he was a public school kid. Family was fairly affluent, had a very large home. And being a public school kid, when his parents were out of town, he threw a party in his house. And it quickly got totally out of control. Hundreds of kids, things breaking, and he didn't know what to do. What do you do when you're in that situation? So he called the local NCSY advisor, a guy by the name of Avi. Calls him up, says, I don't know what to do, my parents are going to kill me. He says, don't worry, I'll be there in 5 minutes. 5 minutes later, there's a knock at the door. Opens up. Sure enough, Avi walks in dressed in a police uniform. Says, what's going on here? Throws the guy on the floor, starts handcuffing him. Within 30 seconds, everyone was out of the house. In fact, hours later, they had like woods behind. Kids were coming out of the woods trying to see if the coast was clear yet. Now, if you become an advisor, you're probably not going to have to do that, okay? That's just. But in the course of our talking, he mentioned to me, he said that he remembers going to Cleveland. We used to have a yeshiva fair. Before, a lot of the schools used to have the yeshiva fairs, everyone come together. NC SWAT for many years had one in Cleveland. And truth be told, no one from any yeshivot was stopping by Indianapolis on their tour throughout North America. And he said he remembers coming there and spending time, and he wound up going to yeshiva in Israel. Wound up meaning he's Basher here. He lives here with four children. He's a Ben Torah. He works for Yesha and many other organizations of those type. And really, he just told me how thankful he was to NCSY for just making that opportunity available. And I think that really sums up pretty much what we do. We reach out to teenagers across North America. We're in 219 communities. We work with about 35,000 teens. Many of them in the public schools. We're now in almost 250 public schools, literally, where, you know, when you define unaffiliated, you're talking about teens that do not go to shul on Yom Kippur. I mean, that's about as unaffiliated as you can get. And we're there basically to say to them, look, this is an option. You can go to Israel. You can be religious. And the way that we do that, quite frankly, is with a team of 800 volunteers, which is constantly turning over. But basically, folks in their 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old, just like yourself, people that are religious, are passionate about the religion, are normal, so that these teens can interact with you and see that, look, you could be Shomer Shabbos and you could be normal, you could keep kosher, and it's not like a crazy thing. So that's really what we're here talking about. Now, as Rabbi Weil said, and I've said many times, if you think you're saying Shem Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, making Aliyah, absolutely you should do that. I would encourage that greatly. But if you are going to come back to the States, then we are in great need. And the truth is, it's not only NCSY. There are many other great organizations out there that you could work with. It's just something that we have to be attuned to. You know, anyone here from Teaneck? Oh, thank God. Okay. You know, but we have we just had a Shabbos Chatzan recently. I was talking to one of our students from who lived literally across the street from B'nai Shurim, who had never been to a shul. Living literally in the heart. I mean, you cannot get more in the heart of the Jewish community than by B'nai Shurim. So that's basically what we're all about. So I wanted to thank you very much, and I'm getting out of here before 7:15. But actually, we have 2 minutes. I can take a question or two. If anyone has any questions about getting involved, we'll take it now. If not, we'll stay here for a little bit to take questions. I'm just going to go on and on because it's a little bit awkward with no hands up. So I can keep going like this. Usually at this point, this is when Rabbi Weil asks me a question, like a mercy question. But any questions about getting involved at all or about NCSY? Okay, good. It's great. You're all informed. Really appreciate that. Thanks for leaving me hanging. Anyway, seriously, thank you very, very much. And we'll stay for a little bit and enjoy your dinner.